Hey son, space on. It's Jorgen Sundberg here with the Employer Branding Podcast, brought to you by Link Humans, London's employer branding agency. This week, it's all about candidate experience. Let's start the show. Kevin Grossman, how are you doing?
Good, Jorgen. Thanks for having me on your show.
It's a pleasure. So tell our listeners who you are and what you do.
So I am the president of Talent Board, which is a nonprofit research organization all about improving candidate experience around the world, as well as improving recruiting processes from pre-application and onboarding. And we do our research is focused on that with employers as well as their candidates. That's what we do.
All right. Candidate experience is a very hot topic, but what is the definition of it?
So from our perspective, a lot of people have said a lot of things about candidate experience, also pretending that it's, you know, it's important, but not as important as it's played up to be. But it really truly is, though. So from our perspective, candidate experience is about every single touch point, any time throughout the recruiting process, which a lot of the time loops back on itself, right? Whether it's I'm researching a job and don't apply or do apply, make it to interview or get dispositioned immediately. It affects everything that we do. And our whole thing is that we're all perpetual candidates all the time. So we don't discriminate, at least from a mission and research perspective, the difference between applicant and candidate. We're just all candidates, period.
And how is candidate experience similar to customer experience?
So very, very similar, because again, one of the things that we found year over year with the candidate experience research with companies around the world is those that have made the jump internally that our primary customer for recruiting, not for the business necessarily, but for recruiting is the candidate. It's not the hiring manager. It's not executive leadership. It's not other team members in recruiting. It's the candidate. So making that jump and being able to then apply everything that applies in recruiting is focused on your customer, then it makes things a lot easier to make those incremental changes that improves that experience.
Okay, so which comes first, candidate experience or employer brand?
Well, that's a great question. From my perspective and from what we do at Talent Board and just my experience in the space, it's always candidate experience first, because I know where you're going with this. I think if I'm completely tuned out of a particular brand and never in my life have I thought about being interested in them, I may be interested if I'm embarking on a career search and I come across a brand that I'm interested in and fascinated by, I want to know more about. Or maybe I had a friend who said, you know what, Kevin, listen, I know you're really miserable in your job. You should check this company out. It's always candidate experience first, because it's through that filter and that perception of what makes a difference, whether or not all the work that you did in employment brand does make a difference, because it is subjective still at the end of the day. So all these things are important that we do in recruiting, but it still comes back to candidate experience from my perspective.
Okay. I'm sure some would argue that candidate experience is what happens once the employer brand has sort of caught you in the net and you're in there and going through the funnel or the process, and then you come out the other end with hopefully
sure.
a good experience.
And I'm happy, you know, and we can arm wrestle about it, sure. But I mean, I'm happy to have a debate about that. I mean, I get where a lot of that argument goes. I'm just looking at it from even a consumer experience too, is that that's why I don't hold a lot of stock in whether you're passive or active, because to me, anybody's head can turn at any given moment for a variety of reasons, whether I'm gainfully employed, underemployed, unemployed, working a series of contract jobs. To me, it doesn't matter. It's still, but anyway, we can move on from that. Gotcha.
Okay, great. So you do this, these research reports. So the candidate experience research reports. So can you tell us, how are they put together and why are they important?
So every year with the research that we do, we ask the employers around the world a series of questions about their recruiting process and how they see their own candidate experience. So a self-assessment. And then for those that want to continue to the next round, then they also target a population of their own candidates, most of whom didn't get the job, because we're measuring what 9 out of 10 of us experience, which is not getting the job. And even though there is a higher population in our research, it's majority of them are, again, those who didn't get the job or were still in process when they finished, when they completed the research report. So last year, globally, we had about 400 unique companies participate and 220,000 candidate responses over that, actually. And in North America was the lion's share, because it's still the biggest part of the program today, although the other two are growing in APAC and EMEA. So we take that data, we run through our own analysis and do a lot of different correlations and poking and prodding at it and kind of sift out the insights and the takeaways every year. And the big report that we've done every year has primarily been North America, although now we're doing EMEA reports and APAC will start soon too. So it's really for all three regions. That's what we do.
Great. Okay. So I know you just released the North American and the EMEA reports. What were some of the top level findings? Was there anything that stood out for you?
So with the North American report, so the last EMEA report was earlier last year. The next one will come out in over the next few months from the 2016 data. But the North American one, which was launched in early February based on last year's data set from 2016, some of the big takeaways for their first, referrals are bigger than they've ever been, not just for companies, which it's always been important, an important part of the hiring process for recruiting teams, big and small, are referrals, right? But now candidates are leaning on their networks even more than they've ever had before. In fact, that's gone up about 14% from 2015. That's a big jump for candidates. And, you know, we've been harping on each other for years now to like build and leverage our networks, right? Well, candidates seem to be doing that more. A big difference year after year from companies that win our Candy Awards, which, by the way, is solely based on the candidate ratings themselves. So it's not a judged process. Mm-hmm. Every year, all the companies that win Candy Awards are those, again, based on the highest candidate ratings. A big difference is it always, and it's this continues to trend this way every year, and it's not unique again this year, is that communication feedback loops. Companies that are investing more in better, not automated and human communication, so it's both, because obviously early on in the process, there's a lot more automated messages that go out, particularly when they're dispositioned. But when there's more thought process put into that strategy, when there's more touching of candidates throughout the process, acknowledging, and then also not just providing feedback, which I know varies what you can and want to say around the world. And the United States is heavy on the compliance side, right? So you have to be careful what you tell candidates of why they're not moving on. But just giving them something that's what I like to call specifically ambiguous, which is always a big hit at our workshops, and then asking for feedback. That's a big difference right there. Now, more companies are doing this. And see, in fact, the big difference, to give you an example, companies that have an overall 5-star experience on a Likert scale of 1 to 5, meaning pretty darn good overall, and most of whom, again, didn't move on or get the job, they're getting asked 30% of the time for feedback, which is really, really huge. Except those on the other end of that have a 1-star or poor overall candidate experience, 88% of them aren't being asked for any feedback at all. Huge missed opportunity there. And for companies who think that, like, I'm worried about surveying too much, or even those that are starting to do it, whether it's through the candies or through their own research, we have not seen any company hit survey fatigue or a wall with it yet. And again, candidates at all stages want to share their voice, especially when they're not selected. Give me an opportunity to, you know, ask you questions or give you feedback. It goes a long way with fairness, which is a big issue and a trend we see in our research too. Does that answer those questions?
Absolutely. Okay, right. So the candies took place here in London, I think, last week, wasn't it?
We did. Had our EMEA celebration for 2016. There's another half of that program that's going on, celebrating in Frankfurt on April 11th as well. So we kind of split those up because the regional programs are more fragmented and not as easy to logistically organize. But anyway, we did one celebration in London. We'll do one in Frankfurt. Yes.
All right. And so, Kevin, what regional differences do you see? You do this report across EMEA, across North America, and for next year as well, APAC. Is there anything that's clearly different?
Well, there are some things that we're digging more into that we'll be releasing this year into the wild, as I like to say, with more definitive similarities and differences. I can tell you on a big picture level that candidate experience is pretty universal, meaning whether it's positive and negative experiences. I mean, candidates are dealing with this all over the world. Some of the bigger differences, for example, are that companies that participated in the candies by industry, there was a larger population of both technology for EMEA companies, interestingly enough, than even US or APAC companies, especially more than US, which I thought was interesting, almost 10% more on the technology side. A couple of other differences as well, which is also the makeup of job type, because companies that are, when they're targeting their candidates, they ask their candidates, you know, by what job type did you apply for? And it was everything from contract to internship to all the way up to senior management, right? So there was definitely a big difference between, there was a lot larger hourly population in the NAM data and a much, much smaller in the EMEA data. And, you know, there's also some just regional differences in recruiting as well. But another big difference there just with the job type is that there was a much larger population of entry level on the APAC side than there was in EMEA. Again, just some differences in who they're targeting. And there was also interesting distributions of gender, much larger on the in generation, much larger on the millennial side in APAC and EMEA than in the United States. And in the United States is a much more of a bell distribution, at least. And again, these are companies who are targeting their candidates, right? It's based on the data that we're collecting. And then if I just jump for a couple of other particular things, is that on the onboarding side, this was another big difference. And again, there's going to be more differences and similarities coming out later this year. There's a lot more compliance oriented and automation on the onboarding side in the States, much more so than anywhere else in the world. And I think that's another interesting thing to point out. So,
Okay. And are there any particular companies who are doing it right? And if so, what can we learn from them?
Well, I mean, I can tell you that, for example, our report that you can download now, which is the North American report, is like I like to say, chock full of vitamins and minerals, and it's got multiple case study testimonials throughout it. So one of the things that, again, is a trend that is repeated again and again, and we can go back to the, speaking of employer brand side, before conversion, before getting the candidates to apply for any job, there's more companies like Questrade and Capital One and Delta Airlines, many others that are investing in some kind of customer service up front, answering questions to potential candidates about what it's like to work there, the jobs, who they'd be working for. Mm-hmm. It's in a variety. It could be done on their career site, like even a live chat, either done usually not 24/7 on the recruiting side, but blocks of time during the week when they're going to, RMS does this too, risk management solutions, where they will answer questions for potential candidates directly by recruiters and people that work there already, because they hire a lot of PhDs. Questrade, that is a Canadian financial services company. They do a lot of blog Q&A. They use social channels as customer service channels, like a lot of consumer brands do now today. Mm-hmm. I think to me that's fascinating, because that goes back to making the mindset of the candidates are their customer, and this is how they're managing them, like you would your buyers, your consumer buyers, right? So those are just a few quick examples, and there's lots more where that came from in the report, and we're going to issue more case studies this year as well with companies. But those are some big things that they're doing, particularly in the front end. And again, just better with communication overall ongoing and at all touch points with the candidates.
Yeah, okay. What would you say is the number one pitfall to avoid with candidate experience?
To not do anything. Okay. I mean, I think really this is a lot of, and we do workshops and educational webinars and things all throughout the year. And one of the things I hear again and again that we hear, myself and our board, again and again, is, you know, gosh, I can't touch everybody. I can't make everybody happy. I can't, you know, even we try to bring closure to everybody. It's hard to do. Well, it is a big task, but as much as you can do it, and as much as you invest in being consistent about it and giving, making sure that expectation setting is clear and communication is clear, and even asking for feedback when you can, not just for new hires, it goes a long way with fairness with candidates. That's really all we want. We're bummed that we don't get the job, but if you were clear with me and you treated me fairly, and then you said, you know, sorry, we're not going to pursue any further, I get it. It's the way it works. And that's what makes a difference.
Okay. And ROI, so the million-dollar question, how can we measure return on investment on candidate experience? So you and I, we get it, you know, with the reputation side, and people go away from a process, even though they didn't get the job, they're still happy about the company. But how do you sell that to a CFO? You say, we need to invest $200,000 in candidate experience.
Well, like, we can frame it this way today, and then I can tell you about where it's going to get even more definitive with quantifying what it costs. Right now, after 6 years of doing this research globally, we can show that candidates that have an overall 5-star experience, means a great experience, most of whom, again, didn't get the job at the end of the day through our research, they 64% of the time are willing to increase the business relationship with that company that they applied to. Now, that means apply again. It means buy stuff if you're a consumer-based business. And then it means refer, which is the big one. So that's a huge potential increase to the bottom line over time. And there are companies today, AT&T and many others that participate in that have won multi-year, especially, are really working hard to try to quantify what that is, because it will vary from company to company and industry to industry. But, you know, it can be into the millions of dollars, the example with Virgin. Is it Virgin Atlantic?
It's Virgin Media, I believe. Yeah.
Virgin Media. So there's an example of Virgin Media that was it's a pretty, you know, well touted case study now, that they actually did the quantification, and it was millions of dollars in lost revenue, consumer based lost revenue based on a poor candidate experience. These are companies that participate in our research are doing the same things today, and we'll be able to have more of that research out there. The other issue is that 64% are willing to increase. That's the good news. 41% says they'll sever the business relationship. That means they won't buy stuff, they won't apply again, and they won't refer. And I always like to use this quick example. I'll throw Lockheed Martin in here. They're a multi-year winner. They're always working hard, trying to figure out what to do better, like many companies are. If I'm an engineer and I go through Lockheed Martin's process and I have a horrible experience, I'm not going to not buy military equipment because I didn't get hired or because I didn't move on. But I'm going to tell my engineering friends that I had a crummy time and recommend them not to apply and go through that process. So even if a portion of that 41% put their money where their mouth is, that could be significant revenue and eventual revenue if the referrals aren't there. So that's the impact that our data can show now.
Great. Okay. Interesting. Now, looking into the crystal ball, what do you think is the next big thing for the next, 2-3 years?
So
no pressure now, Kevin.
No, well, you know, when I think about the investment on the employer side of technologies that help them do recruiting better, onboarding is a big one. Video interviewing, even though it's still not as adopted as we would all, and I would even think it would be by now, continues to grow in investment. CRM, definitely. So talking again about the employment brand recruitment marketing side, there's a huge push, and that's going to continue to grow over the next few years. I mean, companies really being serious about how their brand is perceived in the market and promoting it as such through very targeted recruitment marketing strategies like smart marketers do with their programs and products and services today. So that's the thing I see the most happening over the next few years.
Great. Okay. Final question. Where can our listeners download this report, and where can they find out more about your work, and how can they connect with yourself?
Sure. So just go to thetalentboard.org, and everything that's on there. We have launched the 2017 this research program now, so companies can participate again this year or do it for the first time. Mm-hmm. It's confidential. It's only the winners of our Candy Awards do we actually reveal publicly. Everybody else, it's confidential if they participate. Talentboard.org, everything you need to know there is on our website. And then feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn.
Kevin Grossman, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right, I hope that was useful. Everything Kevin and I discussed will, of course, be in the show notes article, which you'll be able to find at employerbrandingpodcast.com. Now, did you know that here at Link Humans, we're not really thinking employer brand versus candidate experience, chicken or egg, that type of scenario? No, no, no. We see them as complementary and would love to discuss both with you. So if you're interested in learning more about Link Humans and our services, please get in touch by emailing me at jorgen@linkhumans.com. That's it for this week. Many thanks for tuning in and catch you next time. Hey, doll.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Orange.
Orange who?
Orange, you glad to see me?